Alright everyone, it's the Grimlord here, and I'm back with another video. And I've got a guest here today, by the name of Maya Chan. And she's going to talk to us about a few things. And DP is here.
What's up?
DP is here too. And we're basically going to just talk to her about a few things. First of all, Maya, introduce yourself.
Hi, so my name is Maya. My full tag is Mayagaru. I'm an aspiring sex therapist, and I'm also a big weeb. I love Denpa visual novels, and I'm not that interesting other than that.
Well, actually, we beg to differ, because you have some very interesting information. See, you, obviously don't, say where you're from and all that, but you had gone to college, the more like the liberal colleges, what you described as like leftist indoctrination, and you said you took a lot of the feminist classes and stuff like that. So, tell us exactly what is that like, because there's been a lot of people that have been trying to like even listen in and maybe record some of the classes and just kind of hear the stuff, but there's been a lot of people that haven't been allowed to let them even see what kind of stuff is going on. So what the heck really goes on behind those doors?
So I will start off by saying that and this is probably telling as well, every feminist studies area is going to be different depending on the teachers and the school. There's a lot of academic paperwork that can be put into the feminist core work, the women's and ethnic studies core work, and who your teachers decide to focus on can be really important as to what you learn in the school. So there's no sort of like standardized anything. If you're living in a more liberal area of the United States, for instance, it's going to be a lot more liberal. It's going to be a lot more socialist. Other areas, not as much. You're probably looking at more first wave feminist stuff.
Okay.
Mine was more of, I went to a state college, state university, and it was not horribly like super leftist socialist. But it was definitely like a second feminist wave kind of thing, with a little bit of a neo-Nazi feminist kind of sprinkled in there as well, which was what made it so interesting, because a lot of my professors would actually contradict each other and get in fights in the middle of classes, which was absolutely insane. But
wow.
Okay.
That's crazy.
A lot of that stuff is, I'll preface by saying I still consider myself a feminist, but not as heavy as I was before.
Right.
I think there's a lot of important stuff that can come from feminist work, but I think more and more it's become more lost, I want to say. A lot of the core messages for feminism has been lost in the last generation, I want to say, of feminist thought and feminist work, which is really disappointing.
We have a much different generation too, and I kind of see some of the things that are going on, and I've seen a lot of the like radical feminism getting very, very popular in society, and it's warped a lot of young women. It's warped them pretty hardcore to where, like, they don't even want to be around men. And, of course, MGTOW, whatever, was actually formed because of the radical feminism. It was actually a response to that. It was guys saying, you've gotten too crazy for me. It was, like, one of those things. It wasn't necessarily, like... And it sucks that it's like that now, that like, there were these guys that were like, all women are bad and all that kind of stuff, because I've never thought that at all. I grew up hanging out with the girls all the time. I lived with a bunch of female roommates, and I dated a bunch of different girls. So, I mean, I know women are women, and that's just one fact of life. And one thing I've always not liked about the whole sort of thing is we try to say that men and women are the same, but they're not. I mean, they're biologically different from each other. And one problem is they're trying to say, well, you know, women can do all this and women can do all that. And yes, of course, there's definitely women out there that can do some amazing fucking things. But, you know, they're trying. Then there's ones that are saying, oh, yeah, you know, like the weight difference, the height difference, you know, stuff like that. A lot of women like taller men to be able to reach things for them, I've noticed. You know, I'm a tall guy, so a lot of women, and it's majority women, will ask me to reach something off the top shelf for them. You know, they really mm-hmm. tend to like that. So, you know, what I'm saying is, yeah, there's definitely biological differences there. And by trying to say that, you know, oh, we're all the same, that just really destroys a lot of things. And, you know, women go around and they're like, well, you know, I'm going to make all kinds of money and do all that. I mean, that's fine. But, you know, then they wonder why, like, a lot of these, like, these younger girls that don't really have any money, but they're just, like, on Instagram, and they're just really beautiful, pretty girls, and they get all these really, you know, attractive, successful men, you know, maybe a little older, but they get all these attractive, successful men, but they don't have the, you know, the ideal job. They don't make six figures. They don't make anything like that. They're just pretty girls. And a lot of, right. I think, women get mad at that, but you can't really get too upset because that's just female nature, or male nature. A lot of guys like pretty girls. If you're a pretty girl.
I would say a lot of girls do too. I follow a lot of girls, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. I mean, when I went to college, my major was in feminist, women's, and ethnic studies, but mm-hmm. my minor was in mass media communication, and my focus was on pornography.
Oh, wow.
And
that's fascinating.
The vast amount of majority of people who watch porn are men, but mm-hmm. the amount of women watching porn has skyrocketed in the last decade or so, and yeah. it keeps going up.
And this is primarily, at least from studies, this is a lesbian thing. I've heard that women are more into lesbian porn than they are into regular, you know, straight or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
That is true if you're talking about visual porn, so like videos, stuff you see on Pornhub, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of... That, I mean, women viewership for visual pornography has jumped a lot, but what has jumped and has always actually been over visual porn, no matter what, has been text porn. Stuff like 50 Shades of Grey,
oh,
everyone knows
yeah.
about.
Yeah.
And which is one of my arguments, actually, was my thesis was actually about visual novels, and how I think visual novels are the perfect medium for bringing the two types of porn together.
Hmm. That's actually fascinating. So
it does make sense, you know, when you read a book and you get lost in it, you kind of feel like
mm-hmm,
a part
mm-hmm.
of it. Probably definitely goes over better with women and the men would be more visual. So
right.
It kind
of
has something
and
for
one
everybody.
Of the One of those issues is, or one of the primary factors is that women like a story a lot more than men do when we have certain parts of our brain activated that are sexual in nature. Okay. Usually men, males, and men-oriented people are more likely to see something sexual, get turned on, want sex. Mm. Women, on the other hand, are more demisexual in a way, in that they want to feel more connected to someone, they want to feel a part of something, there's more of a, you know, okay, fine, but what do I get out of it? Not to say that, you know, sex is not something that they'll get out of it as well.
Right.
But especially in a relationship, they want to feel involved, more involved than just, I guess we're having sex now.
Well, I guess that's the popularity of the Otome games. Because I know that the Otome games are mainly for women. That's the main draw for that. I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't some with great stories, because I'm quite sure there are. They're probably... some really good otomes out there. Of course, you know, I'm a guy. I don't really get off to, you know, guys and a girl, but, yeah, but,
right.
You know, I'm glad for that, though. I'm glad that there are women out there that like the visual novel medium. And you know, we also really have to talk, because you said you're an aspiring sex therapist. So I've got to know, you have heard of Redo of Healer, correct? You do know about Redo of Healer?
Yes.
Okay. So, women viewership for Redo of Healer, despite it being a, you know, a rape fantasy in some ways, like a really brutal kind of, like, even it's almost like dark eroge kind of thing,
maybe misogynistic.
Yeah.
And but women loved it. And I just have to know, because these are the same women that, you know, have gone around and say, you know, consent culture and all that kind of stuff, which I understand. You know, you don't, obviously we don't condone any kind of actual sexual abuse or anything like that. But you see this kind of thing where women are like, consent, 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 consent. And then they watch something that's just completely, like, barbaric. I mean, the part where he broke her hands and put them back together and did all that, and
there's just, Redo Healer was, for me, it was hard to watch, honestly. And that's as someone who doesn't mind media with rape in it as much.
Right.
Redo of Healer kind of fucked me up, not gonna lie. Redo of Healer fucked me up as much as Maggot Bates did, I think, in the realm of violent sexual media that, like, actually made me need to take a break. But when talking about why women are tend to like those, well, some women tend to like those things, myself included, is rape fantasies are really complicated when it comes to women, or bottoms, or, you know, people who want to be victimized.
It's hard for me to even think about, but yeah.
It is possible, and, you know, to clarify, it is possible to have a consensual, non-consensual encounter. And I think that's important.
What is the weirdest...
you can have situations where, you know, you can sit down with your partner, maybe the morning before or the day before or something, and say, this is what I want to do. Have them talk about it. You talk about the boundaries beforehand. You talk about safe words. You know, if we're doing something and I say the word elephant, everything stops there. You know?
Right.
So that the person who is involved in that kind of victimization has the overall authority at the end of the day to go, whoa, stop, we're done.
Yeah.
Kind of sounds like vanilla culture.
It is hard to find media that is willing to even broach the subject of consensual non-consent. And I think that's kind of to the benefit and detriment of the media itself, because it's fantasy at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily need to be talking about, you know, boundaries and safe words and all that when it is a fantasy. But when it comes to representation, I feel like it's an important thing that we're missing.
Well, see, that's one thing. And, I mean, we talk about the visual novels and anime. These guys and these groups with these, I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm in my 30s. So I wasn't really around for a lot of the waifuism, but I embrace it. I like that guys are kind of finding this alternative and it works for them, because, you know, either they've been really messed up with from relationships, or just a lot of the women these days are, well, I mean, I don't want to say this in, like, a harsh way, but a lot of women aren't really interested in, like, going and starting a family anymore. Like, they're more interested in, like, just doing a lot of stuff.
True.
And the thing about this waifu, though, is that it's kind of like an innocent, and I don't want to say innocent, but I want to say, like, more of a perfect kind of thing where, you know, she'll always be loving to you and stuff like that. And I think a lot of guys really gravitate on that. They're like, oh, she's my waifu and stuff, you know, but they even get to the point where they don't like them if they're non-virginal. I mean, if they're not virgins, they're like, I couldn't believe it when I was looking at some of the groups that these guys are just, but I guess that's how much they value the purity of a woman. And I guess they feel that women have gone so crazy. Like, I mean, TikTok has, if you need information, any kind of, like, you can find so much research. I mean, from the stuff that goes on TikTok, because women will just go in there and say everything now. I mean, there's women on, I think it was a video from one guy, he was showing TikToks of different women, and they were basically saying, you know, I have herpes, and you might too, or I have herpes, and it's fine because I'm hot. I mean, and I'm like, wow, you know, I've got a few friends of mine that may have that condition, but you know what, they've come out in front of me, and they didn't say like, oh, I have herpes, and you know, you're just gonna deal with it. No, they said, hey, before you know, I just want to let you know that I have herpes, and you know, this is a, you know, it's not gonna hurt you or anything, but it will, you know, you, if you get it, there's no way you can get rid of it. You're with it. You have it forever. So you might end up giving it to other people who may not want it.
Right.
And what's dangerous
and I think that's important to note, that I think that's an educational issue, personally.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's an educational issue because when you're, at least consensually, when you're having sex with someone, you should care about, you know, your partner's health, your partner's safety. And something that's really important, actually, in the polyamorous community is that before you have a sexual encounter with someone, or before you actually have sex with someone, you go to get tested. Everyone goes to get tested before anything happens. And then on top of that, there are some people, myself included, that will use what we call fluid bonding, which is basically, I have multiple partners, but I'm only having unprotected sex with one of my partners at that time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's, well, I mean, again, we're from a different generation, and this is all like a different language to us.
Well, you swap endorphins and all kinds of things when you have unprotected sex with someone.
Sure.
It usually makes you bond more with them, which is kind of the name of the idea. Yeah,
right, the concept. That makes sense.
Fluid body.
Yeah, I mean.
So yeah, I think a lot of the issues, especially with people going on TikTok and talking about that stuff, because I've definitely seen those, and I think it's an unfortunate case of not enough education to, you know, this is how you talk to people about sex. We don't do that in the United States.
No.
We don't teach that. There's no sex education. A lot of the sex education that schools do have is horribly misinformed, horribly sexist.
Yeah, especially in my day.
Yeah, and then on the other side, you have a movement towards being proud of your sexuality, which includes, you know, accepting and not necessarily being proud of, but accepting the fact that if you have an STD, it doesn't make you less of a person. Oh. So. If you can't communicate that, then all of this pride around who you are as a person sexually, how you sexually react to other people, gets lost. It gets distorted because we don't know what we're talking about. Let's talk about it. Yes, awesome. But we need to know what we're talking about first.
Right. Right. Absolutely. I mean, you just see the. I mean, it's a different day, because I remember in my day, we would actually go in court. Like, a lot of people would say age of consent, and now age of consent means, like, sex. Now, age of consent, back when I was younger, it meant, like, age of consent to actually just date someone. Like, you would actually ask, like, I remember me, I would ask the father, you know, or the mother, and we would be introduced to the parents almost immediately.
Right.
I remember that.
That all gets fucked up with the internet too, because more and more young people are spending more and more time on the internet. I have more friends on the internet around the world, not just in the United States, but around the world, than I do locally, which I think is wild.
It's amazing.
But yeah, I mean, especially when it comes to age of consent and that kind of stuff, it's hard for parents to monitor their kid while still giving them the independence that they need to grow up a solid person.
And also, you know, there's the BBC scandal that came out where they did research on OnlyFans, and they found out that, I mean, at no surprise to anyone, were teenagers actually on there. Like, teenagers were actually on there making ridiculous amounts of money. I mean, ridiculous amounts of money.
Right.
And the parents are like...
And OnlyFans... Yeah, parents don't know. OnlyFans does not have a way to legally check people's ages because, like, legally, they just don't have a foothold for that.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary, honestly.
No, it's extremely scary.
Yeah.
See, one thing I've always been very much against. Now, I know that there's a lot of Loli fans. I've never understood it personally, but I respect it because I know that, you know, that's their thing. And I do know somebody that has actually had a history of abuse, you know, child abuse, and he is serving 15 years in prison. He will be there for the rest, I mean, hopefully for the rest of his life. And from what I know, he didn't consume that kind of content. He was an anime fan. He was a weeb. But he did not consume that kind of content that I know of. I mean, I don't know what he looked at later in life, because I saw him, you know, he used to be in the military and he
probably
would come
half
by.
The stuff he's saying but he hadn't told anybody.
That's true.
Probably.
That's true. But, you know, they always want to try to say that people that view that kind of content are, you know, liable to become predators. And I don't know if that's actually, like, you know, true. I've talked to therapists about that. I've talked to psychologists about that. And, I mean,
well,
while
I have my own, I have my own view on that. And this is, granted, this is my opinion. I don't necessarily, you know, have any stats to back this up or anything, so I'll put that out there first. But,
okay.
Anime, particularly, Japanese, Chinese, and Korean animation, so East Asian. A lot of their animation is very, with a few exceptions, very soft and feminine in style.
Yeah.
And loli style characters, with the understanding that a lot of feminine qualities tend to be kind of demure in nature, kind of innocent, kind of demure in nature.
Sure.
It exemplifies those. That paired with the really soft kind of shoujo vibe aesthetic just amplifies it even more. So can I see the argument that, you know, weebs might be more aligned to that? Yeah, I can see the argument, but I don't think that an appreciation of certain feminine characteristics automatically makes you a bad person. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. And also, you know, I want to kind of follow up, because with the anime and everything else, we are seeing a drastic leap in technology revolving around, you know, not just AI, but, you know, virtual reality. And a lot of these guys, you know, I mean, even myself included, are kind of more interested in, you know, since women have, you know, drastically changed a lot, you know, as we said, they're not really, you know, interested in being homemakers and things like that. I think a lot of guys are going to do what's been going on in Japan recently, if you've heard about the guys that married the holograms and, you know, stuff like that. I think that's only going to grow in popularity here in the West, because there are a lot of guys that really, really want this. I don't know if you know, but the guy that did AI Robot Life with Aino, I actually talked to him, and he really, really, really legitimately wants a robot. Like, not even joking, just legitimately wants one. And that game is doing exceptional on Steam right now. I mean, it's sold all kinds of copies. He's very proud of it. They're already working on another one. But, yeah, I mean, there's men that legitimately want this. And, of course, there's VR program. It's only going to get more and more interactive. It's only going to get more to the point where you put on a suit and you can actually sit and hold hands with your anime girl. And I think for a lot of guys, that's probably going to be it. You know, we do have an obvious, let's not even beat around the bush. I mean, I don't know what you want to call them, but incel epidemic. And these guys are like, you know, one thing, because I've interviewed the incels before, and I'm not talking about the, I hate women. I'm talking about the actual ones that are like, I can't find a relationship. I can't find a good person. And they're like, and I'm like, you know what? This will probably work for them. Not all of them, because some of them have got to have the 2.5 kids and the wife. And that, I mean, I don't know what happens with those guys. I mean, I hope not the worst, because I'm trying, you know, I want men to be de-escalated. I don't want any more of these shootings. I mean, obviously, you've heard the different shootings we've had of guys that never had a girlfriend, sat in the basement all day. I think the guy in the the supermarket was like that. Yeah, I don't want any more of that. I understand their frustration, But taking it out on innocent people that have done absolutely nothing wrong to you and have their own lives, their own dreams, you know, you're taking away that person's ability to live. You know, you don't know what that person was capable of. You didn't know what they had, you know, and you just took their life away like that. It's really hard to believe. So,
I think that comes to not just relationships with AI, but relationships with parasocial relationships, relationships in general.
Yeah.
I think there is a weird opportunity when it comes to AI and parasocial relationships, not only for men, but for women as well.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout my entire life, even especially when I was deep in feminist left-wing stuff, mm-hmm. was the joke that, like, why would I need a boyfriend when I can just go to the sex store and pick up a dildo? Like,
right.
Why do I need a boyfriend? And there's been an uptick, particularly with streamers, VTubers, mm-hmm. OnlyFans, mm-hmm. all of this kind of stuff, where women are more than willing to be the perfect girlfriend, to be the perfect waifu, basically,
mm-hmm. yeah.
For a subscription, for a short amount of time, maybe for even more.
Mm-hmm.
And personally, to me, I like that idea, but I do see the issue where we're moving away from more long-term,
yeah,
real human relationships that aren't just parasocial in nature. So while I do like and support the idea of stuff like OnlyFans, of stuff like the AIs and stuff like that, I do recognize that that's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
And I don't like slippery slope arguments. It's a big thing right now, definitely.
Well, one thing I do want to mention is, you know, Zuckerberg actually said he wanted to merge all this stuff into, like, the metaverse, basically. He wants to create, I mean, they already have the Oculus. So, I mean, if you know, mm-hmm. women with young kids, I've already seen the mothers, you know, a lot of single mothers now, they have their kids and they give the kids the Oculus and they were taking pictures of the kids, just showing them with their Oculus on. They're like dead to the world. I mean, they're gone. Mm-hmm. And basically we're training the youth to go into a virtual reality because technology grows with youth. And as technology grows, eventually these kids are going to become adults and they're going to want sexual and romantic relationships. So what I see happening is instead of, I know this, and now I don't know how well this is going to work because, I mean, I've seen Ready Player One. I've got the author's proof copy of the book, actually. But, but I do know that maybe, I'm just saying that maybe if we do manage to get people together in a virtual reality environment where they can at least interact and talk with each other and kind of, you know, get to the point where we can actually, you know, when you move your mouth, the avatar or whatever moves along with your mouth movement, so it's almost like you're, you know, the person's there, we might actually be able to create a virtual parasocial kind of thing. Now, the only issue with this is that, of course, I mean, it's not going to be, like, real human interaction, but it's going to be the closest we can do over a network system. So, but they're definitely doing this. Like, all the billionaires are definitely trying to push for this technology. Now, one's not exactly sure why. I mean, other than money, they're definitely trying
money
to push for...
Money is always a driving factor.
Well, yeah.
And I think it's going to be like that to a certain extent. But I think like the dildo idea, you know, there's some things that you can't get from that relationship that you would get from physical. Like the fluid bonding, for instance. You aren't going to be swapping those endorphins with another person. You know, even if you have virtual sex, it's not going to be the full sexual experience that you would get otherwise.
Yeah, yes,
it's
but
not the same.
It won't be the same, but I mean, like I said, it'll be it'll be close for some people.
Some people that don't know the difference aren't going to care.
Right, right. And I mean, that's one thing. I mean, because basically, here's what I think is going to happen. You have the OnlyFans girl, but then you have the ability for her to actually put on a headset and get with one of her fans or several. I mean, because all you got to do is hook up to, you've got this whole nerve. I mean, because they're literally trying to put a computer chip into our brain and run the wires through the blood vessels. This is actually something that I researched recently. It's on Input Mag. But the FDA approved this. The FDA did not approve Elon Musk's method, but they did approve this. And that's what they're working on right now. They've already tested it in animals, unfortunately. I mean, but they have tested it. It does work, and they are going to start pushing that in. And basically what that's going to do is it's going to cause these neural impulses to work as they would in the real world, in the virtual world. That's going to be a little scary, but I think it is... I mean, it is going to allow people to experience things that they normally could not. To feel things, to feel pain in a virtual world, that's kind of scary in a way. Yep. But
every day we get closer to Sword Art Online.
Yeah, that's what we're thinking. I mean, see, that's what we're thinking about. And I think that's what they're trying to push people towards, you know? Like, I don't get... too far. You know, there's this whole big push. I mean, yes, I know there's a pandemic going on, but there's also a big push for people to kind of just, you know, stay away from each other. And I mean, and even before the pandemic, there was always a push for people to kind of just, you know, I mean, with all the gaming releases and everything, there's more people staying at home and communicating than there was, you know, 20 years ago. I mean, 20 years ago, my father told me, go outside and play. I mean, like, that was what we did. And, I mean, we had Nintendo. We just couldn't play it except for maybe a couple hours on the weekends or something. But now it's like the kids are raised on, you know, Fortnite and all these other different games. And the parents, you know, they just kind of, oh, well, the kid's busy and he's happy. And they don't really bother too much with what's going on.
Well, they have their own things.
Yeah, they have their own things as well. Like, they're either arguing on Facebook over politics or whatever else, and they're not even paying attention.
They're locked into their phones. Yeah, they're
locked in.
Whatever devices.
I mean, I've seen women hand their 3-year-olds a cell phone. The 3-year-old gets really greggy. You know how they get when they're, I mean, when they're young, they want something. They're like, here, they give them a cell phone, and they go and they play games. And these kids, they grow to the point where they know this technology better than, hell, most adults do.
Well, they emulate what they see their parents doing in the first place.
I remember teaching my parents how to use a computer. Oh. I grew up, I'm 25 now.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up, by the time I was 2 years old, even before I could walk, honestly, while my mom was still going to work, my dad was still going to work, my aunt raised me for the first year and a half of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, she played outside with me and that kind of stuff, but at the end of the day, she would sit down and I would watch her play Harvest Moon. And, you know, she would sit me in front of the TV and we'd watch anime. So I've been a gamer weeb.
Right.
My whole life, honestly.
Oh, yeah. You're all the things they try to say don't exist. Oh, it's like, you're all the, they try to say, oh, gamer girls don't exist, which is bullshit, because, you know, I know a whole bunch of them. And I mean legit gamer girls, where they're not like, because, I mean, there is definitely the difference with the Twitch girls, where Twitch girls were like, I'm so glad they put IRL in, because I hated pretending to like video games. And that's really disheartening when you hear about that, where they're like, oh, I was only playing the video games because that's all we could do on Twitch. And now it's like, oh, well, now I can just sit and read a book and guys will watch me. And it really it surprises the hell out of me that guys will, you know, watch a woman read a book or watch a woman sleep.
I mean, there's actually like guys that will
pay to watch a woman sleep, which is the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. I couldn't even believe they were doing sleep streams. I was
that's weird to me.
Oh my god, that's scary to me. How would I mean?
Yeah,
sounds like a serial killer practice.
Girls don't play video games. the whole girls don't play video games stuff, that's a meme to me.
Yeah.
I think it's fucking hilarious. I've been in competitive video game scenes, particularly MOBAs and fighting games for the vast majority of my life. Mm-hmm. And when I first started getting into the competitive scene when I was like, 14, 15, something like that.
Yeah.
So 10 years ago, it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. My first big break on the scene was when I was playing League of Legends competitively, right before I went into college. And I got together with a group of girls, actually, that played League of Legends. And we were an amazing team. It was amazing. It was awesome. I remember I had to leave the team because I was going into college and I was moving. So
sure.
I was like, you know, I as much as I love you guys, I can't, you know, I can't give you as much time as I'd like to. I want to say about a couple of months after that, they changed brands. We were originally called the League of Girls. They changed brands to the Sirens, and they came out with this promotional video for the team because they wanted to go on Twitch. They wanted to be more front-facing, which was great. But the video, the promotional video that they came out with was atrocious. It was horrible. It was a mockery. I'm actually really upset about the way that it happened. It blew up, basically, in the League community, and everyone was making fun of it. And when I talked to them after it came out, they were like, yeah, so we hired this promotional team, and they insisted that this was the way to go, that if we really wanted to, you know, get views, if we really wanted to get people interested in us, we had to push the fact that we were girls.
Oh, and man.
It just ruined them. It ruined them. Oh, wow. I know their jungler, my ex-girlfriend, she really wanted to go into promo. She really wanted to go into promotionals, and she just couldn't after it. She got threatened, death threats. God. They got stalked. They got doxxed.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah. And then not too long after that, a couple of years after that, I had the whole incident in the collegiate esports with the MGTOW guy.
All right, so tell us about that, because we, you know, obviously we are a community. Well, I mean, of men on the path. You know, I don't even like the acronym anymore.
Is
and
it
I
that
have,
or more
I
of
have,
an incel, right?
I have fought with guys because, you know, I don't like the whole idea what MGTOW's become. If you Google it, it gives you all the worst, horrible, freaking things in the world.
Yep.
And I'm like, you notice a lot of guys on YouTube that, you know, do this content, they don't use MGTOW anymore. And there's a reason for that, mm-hmm. because, again, it got taken off to be in the most horrible thing in the world, but really it was guys that, you know, not necessarily, I mean, some are frustrated, sure, but there's also guys that have went through really rough marriages, really rough, you know, custody battles, a lot of really horrible stuff, and you really do kind of feel for them, because some women are absolutely vicious. I mean, I'm not going to say that every woman is horrible and everything, but there are some women that are absolutely vicious.
Women can be really mean.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, and I don't just say that, you know, as a woman myself, but when I was going through college, especially when I was dealing with the esports stuff,
yeah.
when I was dealing with just college in general, I was a horrible person. I was manipulative. I was cold-hearted. I was not a nice person. And I chalk that mostly up to survival at the point. And then my other part of that pushed me over the edge was definitely a lot of the more feminist stuff as well.
So,
but back to the MGTOW guy.
That's fine.
Yeah, no, I mean, so basically the shortened version of it was we had tryouts for varsity, junior varsity, and for whoever wanted to be shot caller to lead the team. And so I applied for varsity and I applied for shot caller.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a pretty extensive interview process. We played a lot of solo games. We played a lot of 1v1 versus modes we played. I handed over my stats. There was a lot of stuff that went into it. And when I got picked as main, varsity, mid, and shot caller, I was ecstatic. My team, on the other hand, was not. My jungler in particular was livid. I'm not playing with a girl. I'm not taking a girl's orders. I'm not ganking mid. You can go fuck yourself. It was ridiculous. Eventually, the esports head came up to him and said, so you can either work with the girl or you can leave. And so he was like, okay, fine, I'll work with her. He didn't actually work with us. He never came to practices. He never bothered to do anything about it. He never cared. So after a while, I went back to the coach and was like, I can't. We don't have a jungler. We need someone else. So they eventually kicked him from the team. Well, they put him in junior varsity, and then they brought junior varsity up to us. And then as I was walking out of the clubhouse one day after that happened, he cornered me and he was like, "You told them to kick me off the team." And I looked at him and I said, "Dude, you haven't come to practice the last 5 nights. If you don't practice with us, you're not playing with us."
Right.
This has nothing to do with like who you are or what you believe in. Like, I really don't care.
Right.
I can go do my classes. You can go do your shit. I don't care. We're here to play League. Fucking play League.
Right.
And he got so mad at me that he went to go, he swung at me. Granted, I carry stuff around with me and I have a flashlight that I carry with me, and I hit him with the flashlight pretty damn hard. I was lucky, though, because someone had saw the whole thing go down and backed me up. And then he was never allowed back into the clubhouse after that. But he was very much, I'm not playing with a girl. He didn't care about my skills. He didn't care about nothing. He just didn't want to play with a girl.
Well,
sounds like he shot himself in the foot.
Right. That's really dumb. And, you know, it's really interesting that you have a very sportsman tone when you talk about this kind of stuff. Like, this is, like, you talk like an athlete when you're talking about the way you play League and stuff like that. This is a very, very, very serious competitive thing for you.
Oh, yeah.
And
I've played competitive League for 8 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, competitive.
Yeah.
I've played competitive fighting games, Smash, Melee, Dead or Alive, Melty Blood, Eunice,
okay.
A little bit of Guilty Gear, dabbled in that. I've been playing that competitively for most of my life. I don't take competitive games.
Right.
I take them very seriously. Absolutely. So when I have someone who's like, man, I'm not playing with you because you're a girl, well, I guess you're not playing at all, fucker. Bye.
Right. Like, so, I mean, I'm going to be honest. I'm not good at fighting games. First of all, one, you're going to laugh. I don't use the block button, like, at all. So, and then I play like a damn 12-year-old where I'm going to just kick the person into the wall and keep kicking them until, like, that's as far as I can figure out. I was never really that great at fighting games. I usually, again, because I'm a story-driven guy, like, if it had a good story, and some of these games like Blaze Blue and stuff like that, they legit have stories. I mean, the last Blaze Blue game, it had a full-on visual novel. I was like, damn, is this a game, is this a fighting game, or is this a VN, or is it both? It's like,
fighting games are adopting the visual novel format in the same way that RPGs use the visual novel genre and format, and I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I think that's fantastic.
See, now, I know there's a lot of people that are upset, going, I don't want to read, because there's this one guy I know in the scene, he's pretty popular. He's like, I don't like a visual novel because it's like one long cutscene. He's like, where's the game? It's like, that is the game.
It's the slideshow, the game. Yeah, no, I totally get the meme.
I mean, I get it. Like, my friend used to call them Japanese PowerPoints. I'm like, come on, man.
Exactly.
But, you know, I never thought I could get into it, you know, when I was first, starting out in visual novels. Of course, you know, Bible Black and stuff like that, one of my very first visual novels, by the way. I wanted to get into other ones because I didn't know really what to get into. And all of a sudden, I was on J-List, and they had an ad for a game called Steins Gate. And this was way back when. This was before it became popular. Nobody really heard of it. And all that existed was a fan translation. There wasn't even a full mages version of it yet. So
what year was this, if you don't mind me asking?
Maybe 2012, 2010?
So late O's, early 10s.
Yeah, this is when Fuwa Novel was still Fuwa Torrents. Yeah, mm-hmm, it goes pretty far back. That was the only way you could get visual novels, pretty much, because they just weren't that, you know, and everybody played about the same games. You know, there was a group I was in on Facebook, and they pretty much played the same games. They're like, oh, have you played this? And they would basically make an image of all the games you needed to play, because that's all that was out. We didn't really have that much, and most of it was was only fan translated at best. You know, that's where I started reading the cross-channel translations, which are still considered abhorrent at best, and, you know, stuff like that. And I got into Steins Gate, and then I started getting into Never 7, and then I read Ever 17. Ever 17 blew me away. I actually had a whole situation of my life where I just ate nothing but chicken sandwiches, because, you know, you eat a lot of chicken sandwiches in Ever 17. So I just got a hankering for chicken sandwiches. You constantly hear about chicken sandwiches. You're going to get to the point.
Not me.
Oh, my God. Because that's all they had to eat. And of course, there was Remember 11, which I absolutely loved. It's one of my favorite of all time. And of course, you know, I started playing IO, and I generally like all the stuff that Kid and those companies made, the really mindfucky ones. Right. And of course, you know, I've always been really big into Sei Shoujo, because Bible Black was my first, and then I went into Discipline, and you know, still playing Starless and Closed Game and all that stuff. I just really like his artwork, because his artwork is more. One reason I like Sei Shoujo so much is, I mean, even though I like the whole balloon boobs thing, Sei Shoujo does draw a very more realistic image of a woman compared to a lot of these other artists. Like, if you look at some of his H scenes, they look more like real women. The breasts kind of hang a little bit. You know, they're not just giant, you know, balloons hanging out. Right. They're more realistic.
Right. Staying up right where they need to be, with the cleavage and everything. Yeah.
The proportions are the same too. I mean, because you look at
my first visual novel was 999, 9 hours, 9 persons, 9 doors.
I'm about to play that actually. Yeah, I'm actually about to play that.
It is an incredible game. Oh my gosh, it's an incredible game. Oh, wow. And when I got into college, I had just finished watching Madoka Magica. And
I love that one.
My friend was like, oh, you like Earl Butcher? And I'm like, I mean, yeah, this is great. And she's like, did you know that he wrote a book? And I was like, what? And she goes, well, it's not really a book, but you should still look into it. And she helped me download the files for Sayano Uta, and I watched it in my junior year of college.
I
read it in my junior year of college, and I loved it.
Oh, God, Sayano Uta is great.
I fell in love with the eroge, just genre in general, and I'm not ever looking back.
I have a Sayano Uta a figurine, actually.
Which one is it?
The one with the fairy wings.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah, that is an amazing display. I got it off Wish, but it is amazing. There's one thing, a lot of people get upset like when you buy the figurines off Wish, but I've bought a lot of them off Wish, and every figurine I've gotten has been in very good quality, very good shape.
Punch Man,
I've got Mistress Mamiya from Starless. She came with the couch. Yeah, she comes with a couch and she comes with a wine glass.
Wasn't she the one that came with all the sex toys?
Many sex toys? No, there's one in particular I got that came with a whole box of sex toys. I mean, an entire box of just little dildos and everything. They're little bitty ones that you can use for figurines.
Like sex toys for the figurine? Oh my God, that's adorable.
Oh my God, yeah. Isn't it, though? And I was just like,
tell your mom about it.
She'll
I concur. It is normal.
It really is. But also, hey, there's another thing. Do you own the sex shop you work at, or do you just work at the sex shop?
I do not own it. Okay. And there's been an interesting development.
Okay.
Since our last discussion about this, but it was a couple of days ago where everyone at the store all quit at once overnight.
Wow.
And yeah, it got really bad. Basically, what was happening was they were ignoring a lot of our employment contracts, and they were ignoring a lot of the issues that we had with the store. There was only 3 people working there at the time, which was really rough because the store was open for 13 hours every day, 7 days a week, and you had 3 people working shifts, and those 3 people on their employment contract said, I don't want to work any more than 25 to 30 hours. They were making us work overtime, and they weren't paying us for the overtime. Not only that, but we were working solo shifts, and so when we went to them and said, hey, it's getting dangerous in here. We're all women, you know. We'd like to at least have one other person in the store with us.
Right.
They said, oh, yeah, but that's too expensive. By the way, you guys need to get your numbers up. And everyone got together and said, fuck this. I was assaulted multiple times at my work. My coworker was stalked. Everyone quit all at once. Fuck this, we're out. You guys aren't listening to us. You're not respecting us. You're breaking a whole bunch of fucking laws. Like, we could file a lawsuit against you, but we're just going to leave all at once instead. But I've worked not in just in this sex store that I was in, but I worked in other ones in the city as well. And if I work retail, I will only work retail at a sex shop, partially because it's what I'm interested in. I'm passionate about sexual health and stuff like that. So I have no problem talking to anyone really about sexual topics. It's, like I said, it's what I'm passionate about.
Right.
But it doesn't change the fact that even if I'm working retail in a store, I am still working in the sex industry.
Absolutely.
And working in the sex industry as a woman is dangerous.
Yeah. Well, see, that's one thing. You know, have you ever thought about, you know, because I obviously come from a marketing, I've been in retail, normal retail for 10 years, but also I've done coverage with all kinds of bands and things, and worked with all kinds of publicists and things like that, and they work a lot from home, and they, you know, and I was wondering, like, if you ever thought about trying to get into the eroge industry and start maybe trying to promote and work with the people out there to try to get some of these, you know, other games released, you know, like I was talking about with Sei Shoujo and stuff like that. That would be, I mean, in your words as a sex therapist, do you think that the eroge games are good for sexual health?
Yes. Not only do I think they're good for sexual health, I think they're good for cultural sexual health as well. And part of that is because I have a very, very strong belief that eroge in particular is the bridging pornographic media between men and women. I also believe that eroge is possibly the best medium to teach people about sex, whether that's sexual health, whether that's sexual behavior, whether that's about relationships.
Yeah.
And granted, it does have to be, you know, decent education in that, you know, in that sense. But I do think that eroge as a whole, not just in Japan, but in the West as well, can be a huge changing factor when it comes to education. And just understanding what the sexual experience is like for the other sex.
Okay. And the very last question I have before we let you out and into the open mic, if you want to answer a couple questions. The last question I have is, Do you think that people take eroge too seriously? Like, there's a lot of people that when you mention things like Euphoria or some of the really rough ones, people just kind of clam up and get... Like, we're not going to deny that those novels can be, you know, they can be a bit much for some people. But people start thinking that because you've read this or because you've played this, that that makes you like a very dangerous person, that you shouldn't be around children, that you might be kind of a creep, you know, things like that. And and then I just kind of want to know your thoughts on that kind of issue, because, you know, of course I do the visual novel things and I read eroge and stuff like that live, and I have fans that enjoy it and stuff like that. And of course my ex-girlfriend had contacted me, and she basically said she didn't want me around, like, her, talk to her, don't be around her kid or anything like that. I'm like, all I'm doing is reading games that I enjoy, mm-hmm, and I have, mm-hmm, fans of this. So what do you think about that, about people overreacting when it comes to eroge?
I think it's a two-pronged issue.
Mm-hmm.
The first being mostly the misunderstanding between how we would like to think people think about sex and how people actually think about sex.
Okay.
And when it comes to visual novels like Euphoria, like Starless, like Maggot Bates, any of these really harsh visual novels, for lack of a better term, people think about violent sex a lot more than we would like to think. And some people think about it more, but everyone thinks about it. Everyone thinks about it. You could be the most devout, you know, Puritan, Christian, mm-hmm, religious, you know, person, and you've thought about rape once, at least once in your life. A lot of women in particular have very violent thoughts about sex, because sex can be a lot more violent for women than it is for men. So I think it's a lack of education. It's a lack of communication. In the West especially, we do have this very Puritan view of sex, and,
yes,
and we don't talk about it, you know, whatever, and that's very detrimental.
Yeah.
It's funny that you bring up Euphoria in particular, though. That's the first one that you went to, I noticed.
Well, that's Euphoria, the one I just finished.
One of my favorite. Yeah, that's the one. It's one of my, if not, no, it's one of my favorite top three visual novels. And the reason for that is because that visual novel is so good at talking about deviant sexual behaviors, and talking about how if someone has a deviant sexual behavior that is either violent in nature or manipulative in nature, it doesn't mean you're a bad person.
Right.
And I think talking about sexual deviancy in that way, it's going to be a long time until our culture gets comfortable enough to be able to talk about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But you can be into rape fantasies and not want to rape someone.
Right. Right.
And to be someone who is into that kind of stuff, and to, as Keisuke did in the visual novel,
mm-hmm,
be confronted with that, and not only be confronted with that, but given a path, and then to psychologically work through that, especially with, did you say you finished it? I don't want to.
Yeah. I did finish it.
So Nemu in particular is a super interesting character, because she knew about Keisuke's sexual deviancy,
yes,
before any of Kanaya's stuff ended up happening.
Yes.
She knew that she had to get him to accept his sexual deviancy to get through the game and to save the world. So,
oh yeah,
I think Euphoria is a wonderful visual novel to talk about sexual deviancy, but lack of education and a super stalwart belief in sexual Puritan beliefs is gonna be rough to get through, especially in the West.
And I wonder if it's more for a certain crowd, like, maybe just for instance, like guys that aren't sexually experienced or don't have as much experience in that, if that's kind of
maybe
kind of clouds their mind on what's acceptable in real life.
It can, but it can, as if they don't have the education beforehand.
Oh, yeah.
And I keep going back to this whole sex education thing, but, yeah, if someone, especially a guy who has, sexual deviancy, reads something like Euphoria, reads something like Starless, any of those kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
That's definitely going to cloud his view on how to, talk to and behave with women sexually. And that can be really dangerous.
Yes.
Honestly.
Yes. Well, I mean,
it goes back to the education thing.
There is one thing that I did. I mean, because you were bringing up Euphoria, and I was talking about one thing that Natsuke said. Natsuke said to, he said, you know, I respect a man who knows, like, how his deviant, you know, like, she understood that he had these urges, but she also said, mm-hmm. I respect a man who has, who knows what his boundaries are. And that really worked because, I mean, anybody that understands about Natsuke, she could break him at any time had she wanted to, given her skills mm-hmm. and training. But she didn't because she was honestly trying to, like, honestly, one of my favorite endings in Euphoria is Natsuke's ending. Because, I mean, it's a happy, it is legitimately a happy ending. You know, obviously I don't want to spoil that one, but it's legitimately, it's legitimately a happy ending. And of course, you know, we find out that she's got all these skills and stuff and she basically, you know, got Kanai back and all that kind of stuff and saved the whole world. And they went off to, you know, had a vacation, all that kind of stuff. But that's good because,
I brought that up too, because one of the things that I remembered was, I think it was a year ago, it was that kid, he had a, I don't know how severe a case of autism, but he had watched rape porn, and he was admired this girl and didn't know how to talk to her, and went up and whispered, mm-hmm. I want to rape mm-hmm. you or something, and it got him arrested.
Yeah.
And I can't remember how much jail time he got, but, like, there was, it's obvious he didn't know what he was just copying the show, but...
You
think there's just, you know, I think there's just a lack of education on both men and women's side. Because women are doing all this crazy stuff because they don't really understand what's going on a lot of the times. Everything is, it's hookup culture and it's this to this to this to this. And then you've got these men that are either, they're like, oh, I'm going to have sex with as many women as I possibly can. And then you have these guys that are like, oh, I can't have sex with anybody. And it's just a really... different dynamic, and I don't think it's good in the long run. I think education is something we definitely need, but I don't know who in the world is going to give it to us and how it's going to get there. More
than just the mechanics of sex when they teach it.
Well, they need way more than the mechanics. They need to. I mean, they need to teach people how to socialize. There was actually a documentary they did where they put a bunch of Zoomers together in a room, and they basically put them around this table, and they waited for them to talk. And, you know, they all took out their phones and no one said a word for about an hour. And I'm like, wow.
I believe it.
I'm like, well, wow. Well,
so there is a, I don't necessarily remember the exact term for it, but there is a type of sex education that's been growing in popularity recently. Like I said, I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but basically... it's the idea, as you were saying, that sex education is more than just the mechanics of sex. It's a lot about relating to other people. And so this education format basically says we start, quote unquote, sex education at like fourth grade, third grade, but we start it as a relationship. How do we relate to one another? How do we talk to one another? How do we talk to one another with personal boundaries in mind? That continues every year to get more explicit as time goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Once they get to middle school, it's more of mechanics, that kind of stuff. High school kind of gets in the more nitty gritty of, you know, STDs, mechanics, that kind of stuff. But starting off, quote unquote, sex education as relationship education at a very, very young age is really smart, I think.
And I think too, I mean, sexually, I guess this culture is going through a renaissance of, like, really what was reasonable 20 years ago, how to talk to a girl and how a girl talk to a guy is way different than it is now. You know, the needs, the wants, everything.
It's different.
You know, it's almost like the roles have switched, I guess, romantically. Like, I've heard more men like, oh, if I could just have a girl around just to talk to and hold her hand and all, which kind of...
That's who I recommend the AIs to, because eventually when they put on the VR headset and they have the little glove or whatever, they can... For a lot of guys, that's going to be enough. They're like, oh, I can hold her hand and talk to her, and she doesn't even have to...
I think that's only if they hadn't experienced the physical aspect.
Well, I don't know, because some people have, though, and, I mean, even, like, that's enough for them. I'm just saying, it depends on the person.
Maybe.
You're right, though. There's a bunch of men who are asexual or demisexual who are not really interested in a super sexual relationship. So, yeah, just enough to sit down with a girl and talk for a while and... You know, have intimate conversations is more than enough.
Well, the GFE is the most...
For men and women, too.
The GFE is the most popular service that the... it used to be called the Bunny Ranch, but now it's the Chicken Ranch. I don't know if you're familiar with Alice Little and her stuff, but Alice...
They're doing amazing work over there.
No. Alice Little has a podcast where she educates people about what goes on at brothels. It's a really, really good... you said, you know, you're into sex therapy and all that stuff. She says that we're pretty much therapists at this point, because they don't just have sex anymore with clients. They also have GFE sessions where they're pretty much having to talk with the guys and discuss problems and things now. Which is not...
Actually, that has a very long history, too, as long as brothels were around, men have used brothels more as kind of therapy sessions than they do with sex. I remember reading a bit about the brothels in, like, ancient China, and how a lot of the soldiers... when they came back to their hometown, would immediately go, they would go to the brothel before they went home to their wives so that they could talk to the women there about what they had seen and what they had experienced and, you know, maybe get through some frustration and anxiety before they went home to their wife to be a husband, which, you know, was more of a social role that they didn't want their emotions or their PTSD or anything interfering with it. So they would go to the brothels instead, not even to have sex, but just to, talk.
Sure.
Release some of that stress.
Do you think that we need to legalize brothels here in the United States, legalize prostitution in the United States?
Absolutely.
And what do you...
I think it's a horrible thing that we haven't, honestly. I really do. It all goes back to the education thing.
You know what upsets me so much? And this is a problem with guys. I've talked about it. Drexel's talked about it. By the way, I'm going to give you kind of a shout out on the MGTOWN podcast. You may want to speak with Drexel. He is a great... I think you'll love talking with him about this kind of stuff. But anyway, he... basically said that these guys, this is how they judge a man now. They judge a man by whether or not a man has had sex. If a man has not had sex, his opinion is no longer important. If a man says something that other men don't want to hear, they will basically say, well, you need to just get laid, bro, or go touch grass or something like that. They literally judge a man's worth based on the amount of sex he has or hasn't had. And I'm like, that's not the way that we should be judging a man's worth. You know, it doesn't matter if you have done amazing, successful things in your life. If you have not been with a woman sexually, or you do not currently have a girlfriend, or any sort of thing like that, you were automatically deemed as less than a man. And I've really had an issue with that. And I figure, I say, you know what? If sex was free, because I mean, there is definitely a pedestalization of women going on in society, and mainly because it's a resource that a lot of guys can't get. So obviously, the more value, the more the resource is valued, the higher people are going to, you know, put it on, the more people are, you know, they're just going to fight over it. They're like, oh, that's the most important thing. But when the resource is less valued because it's easier to get. Like, you could just go to a brothel or go talk with a girl and you know, do the prostitution that way. It's not going to be that big of a thing. And maybe men will focus on maybe helping each other. You know, I want a community of men
right.
where instead of bringing each other down and talking about how you're not getting laid, bro, and stuff like that, men are actually kind of understanding each other and trying to work with each other, you know, because, I mean, I'm not to say that women completely do that, because there's a lot of women that fight amongst women horribly, but there are groups where women try to empower each other, and men need to do the same. We definitely need to have
right.
a, instead of this whole, because I did a video on this. I said that there's nothing on MGTOW.TV, from what I've seen, about this woman did this, this woman did this, this woman did this, this woman did this, this yeah. woman did this.
No one's
owning like,
their own.
This is just a distraction. I mean, we can worry about all the women behaving badly that we want, but that doesn't do anything. You know, if you're moving
right.
on, if you claim you're moving on from these kind of toxic, abusive relationships, or you just don't want a relationship, maybe you're done with marriage, whatever, why are you still focusing on all these women that are doing horrible things? Now, granted, young men may need this information. They may make really bad decisions because, again, lack of education. And
mm-hmm.
that's they do get that information. Sometimes it scares them. But, I mean, there are things out there where, of course, women and men are both kind of guilty of this, that we can get both pretty scared if we see, oh, this man did this, oh, this woman did this. So we do get kind of scared, and we're like, oh, I don't want to deal with that. But then, of course, there's the point where we're like, they just isolate from everything. They don't even want to talk to men or women, and that's the really bad thing, because we don't need to just completely separate from each other. That's why I'm one of the guys in the Manosphere along with Drexel that decided, let's bring women back on. Let's let women talk
mm-hmm.
about their experiences, you know?
Well, I think it's interesting talking about what you've described as what I would describe as, you know, it's a meme, but toxic masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about it a lot in feminist circles, and I think what a lot of feminist circles miss about toxic masculinity is that there has been for the longest time a premium on women's sexuality. And when I talk about this, I talk specifically about heterosexual men in particular, but
right.
a lot of men, even if this kind of toxic masculinity behavior is towards other men, as you've explained,
mm-hmm.
it's like, oh, you haven't fucked before.
Right.
You don't matter.
Right.
Because there's still that premium
mm-hmm.
on women's sexuality. So while I totally agree with and I totally support, you know, women being more proud of their sexuality, being more open in their sexuality, there is not, I think there's a uncomfortable lack of acknowledgement of how powerful women's sexuality is when it comes to men and how men interact with each other. And that's something that needs to be addressed culturally. I think it's something that needs to be addressed sex to sex, you know, men to women. And I definitely think that legalizing sex work is definitely a way to kind of get rid of that women's premium to kind of level equal the
yes,
playing field a bit.
Absolutely, that's the issue. I mean, sex can be terrible for a guy. Like, a guy can have absolutely horrible sex with a woman, and the next day, oh, I had sex and it was amazing, it was the greatest thing ever, and it could have been just
right.
horrible, but he's got to tell all his buddies, man, I just, and that's the problem.
But
because
that's
going to
leave
supposed
him with a stigma, too.
Yeah.
And
right. It's
yeah.
funny that, you know, we mentioned it because it was just the other day where my partner, my boyfriend, was like,
mm-hmm.
hey, I'm going to go out with the guys. You know, I'll probably be back by like 1 a.m. or something. I'm like, all
right,
cool. Have fun, whatever. And
right.
I get a call from him at around midnight, and he's like, I need you to help me get out. And I'm like, do you need me to drive you home? Are you too drunk? And he's like, no, I just need you to text me that you want me to suck my, or that you want to suck my dick. And I'm like, what? Why do you want me to text you that? And he's like, because I need an excuse, because otherwise they're just going to want to keep drinking me. They're drinking me under the table. And I'm like,
why don't you
you want me to text you something explicit that both you and I both know that you are too drunk to actually follow up on, might I add. But it was just the whole bit of, like, you know, oh no, I need you to text me something explicit that I'm going to get laid, so it's an excuse, an okay excuse enough to leave.
It's the only reason I could leave.
And I was like, yeah, I was like, you know, that's really scummy, right? Like, you can leave. Well, you don't have to tell this group of men, like, oh yeah, no, I have to leave because I'm going to go get laid.
At that point, it almost sounds like bragging.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole group of guys. Like, they're not going to understand. And I'm like, I get it. I understand. Most of my friends are guys. I get it. I do. But, like,
right.
Fuck.
Right. It's that alpha bro mentality. Like, yeah, I got to hold on, guys. I'm going to go get laid. I'll see you guys later.
Like, at least be a gentleman and show some kind of class.
I don't know. I think the gentleman is about gone these days. Yeah,
I mean,
I'm putting my boyfriend on blast, but you know, whatever.
Right. Okay, well, I'm gonna let you out of here with one. This isn't my question. This is from Drexel the MGTOWN podcast. Shout outs to him. He wants to know, when you were in your when we want to say liberal or leftist college, how was the grading scales between men and women? Did women score higher, or did they have like a difference? Like, basically, if you were to answer something and it was logically correct, would they not accept your answer if it was not according to progressive or what you would consider feminist leanings? Like, if you answered something, but it was logically and factually correct, but there's like, oh, no, this isn't, but it wasn't approved. It wasn't approved answer. Would they still count that as wrong?
Well, so I did get two different views on this when I was in college, given that I had my major in feminist studies and my minor in communication. In the feminist studies area, by the time senior year rolled around and we were doing our theses and all that, there was only one guy in the entire graduating class of about 50 people. There was only one dude, which I thought was worrying. I think even if it's, you know, feminist studies, and even if it's, you know, women's and ethnic studies or whatever, I still think, you know, like, man, why don't we have more guys here? It's not that this stuff isn't interesting. It's not that this stuff isn't, you know, at least in my view, important. But why aren't there more guys here? And I would notice by the end of the semester that whenever that one dude did talk in class and bring up in class, which he did quite a bit, he was always very hesitant about his answers as compared to all of the other girls in class. And I don't know if that was just him as a person or if that was,
maybe white knighting or something like that.
I kind of wonder if that.
Yeah.
You could even trust what he was saying was sincere.
Yeah, I mean, every time he answered something, it would always be like, "Well, I think that," or "I'm guessing that," or whatever, so that just in case he said something that maybe wasn't kosher, that he could just say, "Oh, you know, back out easily." Now, granted, I don't know if that was because of the environment, the education. I don't know if that was just him as a person. What I will say, though, was I almost didn't graduate from that school because the head of the department didn't want me to graduate because of what my thesis was about. My thesis was about visual novels and the representation of consent and female orgasm in visual novels. Was livid. She didn't want me to graduate. She was like, this is horrible. This is not what we support. You know, why couldn't you do something on just, you know, focus on, you know, popular feminist theorist or something? And I said, well, because I think this is important. And she almost didn't let me graduate. Instead, I ended up taking my thesis to another person who was in the department, who was actually our only male teacher in the department.
Sure.
And he was like, this is one of the best theses I've ever read. I think this is incredible. It's stupid that she's not letting you graduate, and I'm going to let you graduate. So the whole grading spectrum was questionable at best. Now, granted, this was I can't speak for other universities or other colleges. Sure. You know? But specifically when comparing the grading spectrum from my communications department to the feminist studies department, it was, I didn't know whether I was getting bad grades because they didn't like how I was phrasing things or how I understood things, or if they were grading me on, you know, a standard scale. And that was really rough because, like I said, it wasn't that I didn't like the material. I thought the material that I was reading was fascinating, was interesting, was important. But there was a lot of teachers that just didn't like the way that I took it. And that took a hit on my grading quite a bit, actually.
I think you're applying it to real life applications more than just a history lesson on a feminist.
Right.
I think that's more practical.
My focus in sexuality and porn was definitely an issue for a lot of those teachers too, because they were very Puritan in that, you know, we don't talk about sex. We're gonna downplay, you know, feminine sexuality as much as we can. And I was adamant about, you know, no, we're gonna talk about sex, and we're gonna talk about sexuality in a feminist perspective with these feminist theories in mind. And if we're not going to talk about it, then I don't know why I'm here, honestly.
All right.
I was wondering
what
the time period that you were in college for, because I was kind of,
it took me 5 years to graduate about, which is fairly average.
Oh, yeah. Wondering if it kind of coincided with the cancel culture movement and the Me Too movement, if that you saw a change in like dynamics at the school during that period.
Yeah. Me Too was in full swing when I was in my junior senior year, and it got pretty rough because. There was actually a lot of pushback against the department. We had not done anything about Me Too. You know, we had acknowledged it in class and all that kind of stuff. But I remember a handful of departments, I don't remember which in particular, started pointing the finger at the West department, at the Women's Studies department, you know, saying, you know, you're accusing people in this whole Me Too movement of bullshit. And we were like, whoa. What are you guys talking about? Granted, my teachers kind of took that and hit the gas with it and decided to go full extremist on it, which, you know, that's just what happens. But I remember the Me Too movement being very much full force my last 2 years of college.
Wow.
And it was interesting how my department didn't do anything about it until other departments came to us and started pointing fingers about the Me Too movement. And we were like, whoa, what? All right, fine. If we're the bad guys or whatever, then we're going to fucking be the bad guys. And I took that with stride as much as I could. But I was just focusing on graduating, man. Like, I didn't care about the drama at that point.
Nah. Yeah, that's understandable. Yeah, I was wondering because I know I think it was really starting to go on about my last 2 years of college.
Yeah,
and people that were very cheerful and friendly like the year before were kind of bitchy and in a bad mood all the time. Then I think one girl I wasn't interested in was like, "Why won't you go out?" And I was like, I don't think we'd get along. And it was a big, like, well, that's just because you're an asshole. And I'm like, whoa.
I think the Me Too movement in the cultural sense has definitely made women more, I think, aware and maybe a little bit more defensive in that sense.
I have no problem with the woman speaking her mind. I just feel like a lot of people in general kind of just jump to the victim status sometimes in that area.
Yeah.
Instead of rationally thinking it, like, oh, well, okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on. This has been a really great interview. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Yeah. I wasn't quite sure how this was going to go, and I'm like, oh, no, this is awesome. This is really good. You're free to, you know, come in, and if you want to do something again sometime, let me know. I'm definitely open to it, and don't let the guys in the server, you know, they don't bite. We're not.
Sure, they have plenty of questions.
We're not those kind of guys, you know, the ones that, I mean, you will obviously see, like, memes about this women did that. I mean, men share that around here.
Are you going to look?
Like I said, I'm not a stranger to that. Most of my friends are guys anyway, so I totally get it.
Oh, yeah, it's cool. All right, so thanks for coming on, and I guess we'll see you later. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and this will be the Grim Lord and Dead Penetration, and we are out.
Later.
Enjoy the decline.
Thank you. Bye.